You can't beat the taste, good, crisp, autumnal apple. It's firm flesh, luscious juice, its regular, round shape. The apple is one of the most widely cultivated tree fruits, with over 7,500 varieties worldwide. But it turns out we can add at least one more to that figure, all thanks to a lone tree on the remote island of Bardsey, or Entley in Welsh, which lies at the very tip of the Llyn Peninsula in North Wales.
Maybe the Bardsey apple is a remnant from monastic days, from medieval times, or even older than that. Nobody knows.
The story of how this unique Welsh apple was discovered begins with the so-called Apple Man of North Wales, Ian Sturrock.
Well, it's always been there, of course, but about 4 or 5 years ago, my friend Andy Clark, who was a twitcher, a bird spotter, and was staying on the island, was collecting fruit from this tree, and he realised that these fruit were ones that he didn't recognise.
7 feet.
So he brought them to me. I'm supposed to be the local expert. I didn't have a clue.
Barren, strange fruit.
I sent them to the National Fruit Collection at Brogdale in Kent, and they said they were unique.
Bardsey Island, the island of 20,000 saints. It was the site of a monastery founded by St. Cadfan in the 6th century and became a place of pilgrimage, especially popular with pilgrims who would come to die and be buried there. So to find out more about this rare tree, I needed to make my own pilgrimage to the island, and earlier this year I accompanied Ian to tend the tree. We're at the end of the Llyn Peninsula, right down by Porth Maidwy.
Yeah, it means Hermit's Cove.
And we're just along the coast from Aberdaron, and we're just about to catch the boat out to Bardsey. What are we expecting to find today?
Well, that's a good question. Obviously, you're the BBC, and you expect the tree to be covered in lovely rosy apples, waiting for me to pick them so you can make a nice programme, but I don't know. Whether it survived this awful summer, I don't know. We'll find out.
Entley. We get to it through troughs and rainbows, flying and falling, falling and flying.
I think it's tight, Tony.
About 30 foot.
Is it? It's big, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
The island swings towards us, slowly. We slide in on an oiled keel, step ashore with berth-wet, wind-red faces, wiping salt from our eyes, and notice sudden welling quiet.
So we're on the island. Where are we going?
Can we just nip over to the beach so that I can get a bag full of seaweed and I'll take it over to fertilise the tree with you?
I was going to say, what's that
because
for?
Because seaweed's obviously it's a good fertiliser for the tree, especially for the producing the fruit. As you can see today, you might expect Bardsey to be bleak and cold, but it's really bright and sunny. That's because it's out to sea and you don't get the influence of the mountains like you'd get in Snowdonia.
It doesn't really get that cold here, does it?
No frost, much less rain and much more sun.
Is that something that's good for apples?
Yes, very good for apples. The climate here is more like Kent. Obviously the tree can withstand the salt winds and the spray, because if you look around, there are no other trees on the island. There's Emma on his tractor. Hey, that's right.
While Ian caught up with Emir, I did a bit of exploring of my own. These days, Bardsey is a popular tourist attraction, especially amongst artists and poets, but also for its wildlife. So I stopped off at the Bird Observatory to meet the warden, Stephen Stansfield.
What we do is record and monitor the birds all over the island.
I know the biggest sort of attraction of Bardsey is the Manx Shearwater, really, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got about 16,000 pairs of Manx Shearwaters on Bardsey. They nest all over the island in disused rabbit burrows, up on top of the mountain and around the east side. But a lot of the walls that are scattered around the island, old field boundaries, earth banks, there's several thousand burrows in those. They come ashore only at night to breed, spend all their time during the day out at sea, and they spend their winter down in the South Atlantic off the South American coastline. We do get some quite unusual species on here. Bards is one of the better places in Wales to see rare birds. Just yesterday we had a scarlet rosefinch, which is a very scarce bird in Wales. It's from Eastern Europe, should be heading down towards India to spend the winter, but it's gone wrong and come west.
Now, you said you've been here 10 years, is it?
Yeah, I've lived here now for 10 years. Emma 4-6, and we've got a 5-year-old son.
So how do you get your food, and do you get it off the farmers? And...
because we've been here so long, we know quite a lot of the visitors that come here regularly. They phone us up, say, do you need anything bringing? But we get large amounts of food during the winter. Then we go off for a couple of weeks in the summer, bring a lot back then.
You should have said it. I could have brought you a sandwich. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be lovely, yes.
It's a bit lumpy.
The poet Christine Evans has been associated with the island since the 1960s, when she married into the last of Bardsey's farming families. She gave me a ride on her buggy and tell me about the island's monastic past.
This is all that remains of the medieval abbey that was once so famous a place of pilgrimage that... 3 visits here was equivalent to going all the way to Rome.
So would they have been living on the island then?
Well, we know that people have lived on the island for perhaps 10,000 years. This whole coast was ravaged by Viking raids from about 853 right through to, well, 1011. We know there was a monk living here because he's the one who died and is named. The monks might have been attacked, their treasures taken away, their buildings looted, and they themselves might have been enslaved. But they always came back. So it's been a place of wild men and conflict, as well as a place of great calm and peace too.
It's a bit of a contrast between the monks and the pirates. So this is the chapel.
Yes, this is part of the Victorian rebuilding. There are services are held here when there's a priest or a minister in residence, and we've only got a handful of pews now. I mean, once you would have had a congregation of perhaps 90 people.
Right, that would have been a sort of peak period on Bardsey, would it?
Period, which yes. Was that's about 1900.
This is obviously a very inspirational place, and you yourself are a poet. Actually clutching one of your books here, Island of Dark Horses. I wondered where the title came from.
It's actually a quotation from Laurens van der Post's writing. The whole book, really, is an exploration of why people return to this place over and over again.
Would you read us one of your poems?
This is from the poem called Island of Dark Horses, and it's from the first section, Lords. A world of waves and pouring air, the lighthouse's long, steady stroke in the flux of the sea. An island where so many came to die. Fragment of land, but a whole place, peopled, generous with truth between the tide's twin ceremonies of light and dark.
So this is Plasbach. Hi, Ian. You're actually eating an apple there. I told you not to pick them before I came back.
I won't be a minute. I'll just finish it. And I'll choke. There's the tree on the side of the house.
The one growing up the side.
And the roof.
Isn't that pretty? Look
at the colour of the fruit. Look how red they are. Fantastic. Go and have a look.
There's nice lots of clusters of apples as well.
That's right.
And it is. It's growing up the side of the house, isn't it?
Yeah, you can see... It's recessed about 2 feet into the wall, and the roof is recessed 2 feet lower, and somehow the tree is growing in that recess.
So this is nothing to do with your pruning? I mean, it looks as though somebody's cut it into that sort of shape?
It looks like it's been trained up the side of the house. That's Mother Nature's done that, done a better job than what I could do. But what I do want to do today, you see, see that crutch there, right in the middle of the tree where the two main branches diverge, there's a hole there. So if we get up close, you can see here, look, I can get my knife right in there. I'll clean the hole up, I'll fill it up with foam. I'll use that builder's foam, you know, the plumbers use it when they make a hole in the wall. That'll expand. When that goes off, I'll shape that, and then I'll cover it with black emulsion. Again, that black stuff that you'd repair your roof with, that'll stop water going inside the tree. I think that's the main thing it needs doing today. This is an interesting thing. Look, normally you read your books and it will say, when you prune an old tree, remove crossed and dying branches. Well, this whole tree is just a mass of crossed branches. But this tree, for some reason, is so disease resistant. Look over, there's no other trees here, let alone apple trees.
Would this tree have been planted deliberately in this spot?
Someone's planted this tree here deliberately, I would say, because you see, like I said, it grows in this recess. It's right in the middle of it. It's not been trained as a fan in the recess. And because I work quite often in old historic places, I know what the remains of a fan looks like, or the remains of an espalier. This isn't.
So was it or wasn't it planted? Other theories abound, and horticulturalist Gerald White suggests another theory about how the tree might have got there in the first place.
It is always possible, you know, that somebody out at sea could have discarded an apple core, and the apple core sort of floated away for many, many miles, and these things really do happen. Or it could have got picked up by a gull or something in a foreign harbour, dropped on a ship's mast. And then when the ship was near here, a Welsh gull picked it up and just coincidentally dropped it where it's growing. So, I mean, anything is possible. I don't think anybody is ever going to be able to come up with the full history of it. But in fact, the mind can run totally riot as to how it arrived where it did.
I did hear an interesting story. Obviously, over the years, I've sold a lot of trees to people that have visited Bardsey or have heard of Bardsey, but also people that have lived here. And a really old lady, she was called Stella. In the 20s, Stella's mum was the schoolmistress on the island. Stella was a little girl. Stella thought the tree came originally from Italy. That was because this was Lord Newborough's house on the island. He had a new wife called Stella. When Lord Newborough was 50, he married an Italian beauty aged 13 called Stella. So the Stella born on the island thinks that this other Stella might have brought a tree with her from Italy. But whilst that's an interesting story, I think it's extremely unlikely. Well, what we have to do now is if you hold the ladder steady, I will get up the ladder and try and pick you some fruit.
Who owns the tree? Are we allowed to pick these apples?
I'm a scrumper. If you see an apple tree, you should pick first and ask afterwards. Especially if you can eat them as quickly as possible, you destroy the evidence.
Okay, well, let's get on
that. Look at that one. Look at that. Beautiful, isn't it? Ready?
I want the ones right on the top. Oh!
Sorry.
That's a bruised one.
What?
I'm sure you've left the juiciest one right at the top there.
Well, that's a nice looking apple.
Oh, there we go. Hold on. It's nice creamy with a rosy sort of pinky tint on
it. The cheek, where it catches the sun, that's pink at the moment and it will become scarlet later on. It's what they call splashed, like it's been splashed with a paintbrush.
It's not a uniform, but almost paint that actually, couldn't you? It's a sort
you could
of
splash
Monet
it with paint. Well, there you go. The background colour, it's yellowy green now. It will turn a golden yellow again as the apple ripens. And you can see it's fairly regular shape and... well, it's about average size, isn't it? You want to try?
Yes, please.
That's a really juicy one, isn't it? Look at it running off the blade of that knife.
Oh.
Pretty good, isn't it?
That is lovely.
It's worth risking your neck for.
It's not too sharp.
No.
And it's not too sweet either, as you say. Emir Roberts has come along.
Yeah, Emir, look at that one. Gorgeous colour, isn't it?
What do you think, Emir?
I think it's lovely.
Tastes nice.
Yeah. Actually, I like them a little bit younger than this, when they're a little bit tarter.
But this
is nice
almost,
and crunchy, isn't it?
It was nice and crunchy, very crisp.
Has this year been goodier for apples? Because this was full of flowers earlier on. And then we had a gale and just blew them off like snow.
It just gets pruned by the sort of spray gun.
Yeah. Right, how old do you reckon it is? Do you reckon it's 100 years old?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Don't see why not.
I don't think it's as old as the house.
But no, if I make a slight mistake with this chainsaw and chop it down, we can count the rings.
I think I'm going to disappear now.
Now, at the risk of sounding like I don't know my birds from my bees, and if there's only one tree on this island, how does it bear fruit?
Well, that was a good question, and that was something that we used to ponder over. Almost all apple trees are self-sterile. That means they need another pollination partner to fertilise them. There are trees right down the other end of the island at Ernest and Christine's house, but can't see bees flying all that way against the wind just to pollinate one tree.
They're not the same. They're not Bardsey apple trees. They're a different type of tree.
That's right. So they would.
So you'd have to have a bee visiting there, carrying back here with pollen on its
wings.
Exactly.
Also, the other way, maybe bees got blown over from the mainland to fertilise it. But again, there aren't any apple trees at the end of the Pentelian Peninsula. So that was always a mystery. And then 2 years ago, we were looking in the garden of the observatory, which is the house behind us.
Which we passed on the way
That's
up,
right.
Didn't we?
And under these brambles, my son Joseph found this diminutive apple tree about 3 feet high, just totally and utterly smothered with the brambles. So I think it was this tree that Joseph found that has been pollinating the Bardsey tree, because it's only 50 yards away.
Well, I think we'd better go and have a look at it, don't you?
Sure. I must say, though, before we eat it, it isn't delightful. Right, open the gate. There we go. There's the so-called Jojo's Delight tree there. You can see it's grown a bit taller now. It's about nearly 5 feet tall.
That's a tiny little tree, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it wasn't as high as the wall before. Joseph, being on the short side, saw this tree underneath the undergrowth and saw these little apples. Can you get in there?
Oh, gosh, there's fruit in there.
When we first saw them, they were a pale, insipid yellow, but these ones here are just a real lovely gold, aren't they?
This is a golden, a much smaller apple. In fact, they're tiny. Oh, different flavour. That isn't too bad.
That's not too bad. No, I know.
I thought you were going to tell me it's horrible.
The first year it was horrible.
No, that's quite very apple-y.
It's a strange apple, isn't it? It has a medicinal flavour. There are 7 basic flavours of apple, and one of them is medicinal. Can you get it? Old-fashioned medicine.
I see what you mean.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Ellison's Orange or King of the Pippins have this flavour.
There's a slight bitterness to it, isn't there?
Yeah, I think it's a cider apple. And you see where I'm squeezing this?
There's quite a lot of juice.
Yeah, look at
there?
That. See how it's quite open, the structure of the flesh itself. It's a chewiness about it. You can see I'm compressing it, and I'm not even very strong. See the juice coming out of that?
Yeah.
But this is it's better than it was. It's edible. Nice. It's not bad, is it?
It's all right, actually.
So we might not know how the Bardsey tree got on the island, but we can perhaps hazard a guess as to how it keeps producing fruit. It was time to see how the tree would fare on the mainland. Would it cope with the damper conditions? Ian has taken cuttings from the mother tree to his experimental orchard on the outskirts of Bangor. As we've been going along, Ian, you've met people that you've said, how's the tree going? Has everybody got a tree off you around here?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Tony, the boat driver's got one. Gareth, the boatman's got one. It's good. It's good for them. Didn't have to pay for them.
Right, where are we going?
This is a polytunnel where I graft my trees.
Are these all Bardsey apple trees now, then?
All of these with the red spots on, yeah. There's 1,025 trees. I buy the roots in. This is a rootstock here, you see it?
What do you mean a rootstock?
It's like a little tree. Chop its head off, it's called beheading it, yeah? The top bit's gone, the sap is concentrated in the root. When the sap comes up, I stick a little piece of wood on. You see that there?
Oh, right, yeah.
And then the two pieces have joined.
Well, where did you get this top wood from then?
That's a piece of Bardsey wood.
Oh, I see, right.
Yeah? And then that top bud there has grown into this tree. This tree now is a Bardsey apple tree, except for the trunk. The root was somebody else. If you look over there, you saw by my house over there, there were trees with all branches sticking out all over the place. Well, because I don't have a great deal of land, I've grafted bits of wood from all different varieties of trees onto my single trees. So each tree has 6 or 7 branches, all of different varieties. This tree here was one called Crispin, a fine English apple, as you know. The Battle of Agincourt was won on St Crispin's Day, so it's a good patriotic English apple. In actual fact, it's a Japanese one called Matsu, and they changed the name to appeal to the English market.
All right.
And it does well in England, but in North Wales, it's rubbish. It just gets really scabby fruit. So I've changed this one. You can see all the various branches to a lot of different ones. This is one from Monmouth called Sissy. This is another one from Monmouth called St Cecilia. St Cecilia was the patron saint of music. There's one here. This is Rosemary Russet. That's a good apple. This is St Edmund's Pippin. That's a good one. That piece sticking out there is the original Matsu Crispin. And I grow these rubbish ones, so it helps me identify fruit when people like you bring them in. I don't discover anything. People bring them to me. If we look in the other polytunnel, that group of trees there is ready to go to a garden centre in St Asaph.
So we've got Troen Mochyn.
Troen Mochyn, pig snout. This is an Anglesey cooking apple. This one here was a Snowdon Queen pear. That one over there is Abadankwithen. They're nice, small, russeted apples with a fennel flavour.
What do you do with all these trees that you actually graft? You're creating a lot of them. Do you sell them on to nurseries or...?
The discovery of the Bardsey apple has had a lot of coverage in the media, so people from all over Wales, or people from all over Britain, in fact, all over the world, have found the website, or they've read about it or whatever, and then I send them trees. I'm selling more trees locally in the local garden centres than all the big outfits in Holland or England or other foreign countries, because people want to buy local.
Like Ian, Gerald White is ever on the lookout for disappearing varieties of Welsh apple and reminds us that actually this humble fruit has had quite an important role.
100 years ago, when we had heavy industry and then we had lots of mining and things like that, something that was an essential item in the tommy box, the lunch box for the worker, was in fact a good, crisp, juicy apple. And they didn't want apples that were too large. So Wales got rather, I suppose, a good name for producing good quality apples, but smaller. Sadly, of course, lots of varieties have got lost. We're only able to actually find and identify now about 20 true Welsh varieties. What has happened to all those old varieties? It's really interesting, and I'm sure you know that we have got people there that are listening to this, that they do have a rather elderly tree in their garden, and they don't know the name, they just know that it produces beautiful apples year in and year out, and we really need to hear from those people, because that might be the last tree of that particular variety.
Besides being a popular lunchbox fruit, apples have so many uses. You can juice them, turn them into cider, dry them, stew them, bake them. The list is endless. And the Bardsey apple, as I found out, makes particularly good juice.
Down. If you turn this handle, and I'll drop the fruit. Go on, faster, faster. Oh, sorry, wrong way. So this is the milling half of the machine, chopping the apples up into bits, and they're now dropping, come on, hurry up, they're now dropping into the bucket below.
A load of electric liquidators.
You can get a smell of the aroma of the juice already, can't you? Just a couple of little ones now, that's it, yeah, keep it going, nearly there, well done. We put this big piece of American hickory, so that'll act as a piston now, and we'll spin this screw down. You can see it's starting to squash it down now, treat, isn't it? Yep. You can already see the juice is starting to come out. Yep. Probably about it. We'll just let that run. Shall I grab a couple of glasses and we'll give it a try?
Yep. Oh, it's a rich brown colour, which is not the colour of the apple inside, is it?
That's because the juice becomes oxidised.
Oh, smell that. So autumnal, doesn't it? It's so...
Very poetic. Autumnal, yeah. Not apple-y.
I'm progressing. Oh, that's nice. That's really nice. Really fresh.
It is good, isn't it?
I must confess, I'm not really good with apple juice normally. Because it always tastes of sort of...
Well, it's been
forced
in...
Forced apple.
Yeah, it's because even when you buy so-called fresh apple juice in the shops, it's always been heat-treated to sterilise it. This is still alive. This has got all the enzymes in. All the vitamins are all there.
It's quite a sweet one as well. It's sweeter than the fruit.
Mm.
Right, well,
cheers.
Now, with the long dark nights, apples make an important ingredient in many winter desserts. Apple pie, apple crumble, apple crisp, apple cake. Then there's apple sauce, apple butter, apple jelly. But what's the best thing to do with a Bardsey apple? Who better to ask than the chef proprietor of the Michelin-starred Place Beau de Grois in Pwllheli, Chris Chown?
OK, well, I've brought some apples along, Chris.
Right, OK.
Is that going to be enough to perhaps
crikey,
do something
yes,
with?
Yes, fantastic.
What would you normally... I mean, we juiced it, and it made a very nice...
Nice juice.
Do you want to cut one open, actually?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's just get a good one. Quite firm, isn't it? And snappy, you know? But slightly soft on the texture, which makes you wonder if it would break down. on cooking. If it does do, then we just have to do something else with it.
Right.
But, you know, how can we know unless we try?
All right. Well, should we give it a go?
Okay. Let's try and cut a ring of pastry. Concern.
It's one of these, I've done this earlier kind of things.
A little bird told me that you were coming, so I thought I'll just get some pastry ready and rolled out, because it needs a little bit of time for it to rest. This is what the French would call a tartine. The apple is fanned on top and then cooked quickly in the oven. When the pastry is cooked, the thing is ready. What I've got here, just to moisten it a little bit and liven it up, is some almond frangipane, which is almond and egg and sugar and butter. And then I've just got a bit of glaze here. Now, this is apple juice and apricot jam. The apricot jam is simply to thicken the apple juice. This is basically just wanting to enhance the apple flavour a little bit.
So in an ideal world, would that be apple juice made from the same apple?
In an ideal world, that would be super, yeah. I think that the buzzy juices well, then, I mean, you know, you're giving me ideas of thinking of things to do with this now, so, but that would mean a lot more time experimenting. Yes. Let's just pop this in the oven. The apple stayed quite nice and firm, hasn't it? So just try and get it off onto a plate for you. One of the old asbestos fingers here should have a go first. No, see, I think that's really nice, because you can taste apple on top of that. Whether it's because of the little bit of glaze, but it's definitely apple-y. It stayed nice and firm. Maybe, you know, if I took that juice and made that into the syrup and glazed it with its own juice, as it were, then we'd just enhance it that bit to give it a boost.
Yeah. You know?
And then maybe just serve it with a plain ice cream against the hot tart. Be very nice.
I had a really nice day at a school in Llandegfan on Anglesey in the spring. There's a fantastic headmaster there. And we got these two classes of kids, and we had them chopping up apples, making apple rings and making apple juice. I think most of these kids have probably never had apple juice in their life. After these kids made this juice, they loved it. They all had little bottles to take home. It was fantastic. Ultimately, once I can make enough of these trees, once I stop selling them and I get a surfeit, I'd like to give a tree to every school in Gwynedd, because you've got the Jamie Oliver thing of trying to get kids to eat good food, but if the kids are involved in growing it and producing
planting
it, that's the way to get kids to eat stuff, proper food.